go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here, halfway through the week, 9 minutes, no, 9 days, I'm coming unstuck in time, the next incarnation of the fabric of the universe Nova thing, I think, comes on this evening at 9 p.m. right after showtime, and having watched the first one of those, I'm a little loosey-goosey in the universe. No, it's almost 2 minutes past the hour, 9 days into November, halfway through the work week. And this is the horn. This is the Head On Radio Network. We call what we do here conversation radio. You, of course, are a central and integral part of that process. Can't be much conversation without you. So just keep that in mind. Sincere thanks going out to a number of people, and I have tried to write to each and every one of you, so thus you know who you are, who have chased the lupine pest off the front porch for a little bit. I spent a part portion of today paying bills, and that was gratifying. I know it probably sounds silly. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just the honorable nature of being working stiffs. There's a pleasure in paying bills. Of saying, ah, electric company, done with you. Ah, water, done with you. For at least another month. And knowing that one has fulfilled one's obligations. And that is indeed the case. And it is thanks to you. We are still considerably behind where we should be in fundraising for this time of the month. Let's see. 10, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, yeah. We're a couple of $100 behind where we should be for this time of the month. But you really did roar into the breach, and it is much appreciated, sincerely. Thanks for the kind mentions on Twitter, by the way. Liberal in South Carolina, liberal in SC1, having just tweeted, time for cussing and discussing with the only Southern liberal voice. Really appreciate that. Really, really, really. Twitter can be a very effective, communications tool when used for good. And, if you're on Twitter and you want to follow me, you're welcome to. I'm just plain old Bob Kincaid. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. We do have a Twitter account, The Horn, T-H-E-H-O-R-N. And the same is true for our Facebook page. So, yeah, jump out there. It's a great way to stay in touch. In fact, I was tweeting something earlier today that a number of you saw, and you saw it via Facebook and you saw it via Twitter. Whatever I tweet goes on the Facebook page. I know. Isn't it just a sort of jargonistic ick? Yeah. But still, I saw this post, and it was a repost. But I saw it over at angryblacklady.com. And it was one of those Obama apologist pieces. And it was rather rife with in-your-faceness, I guess you would say. It was all about how, you know, Obama, thou shalt not criticize Barack Obama. But I got down into it, and it had one little sentence that made me go, when this Obama apologist claimed he even stopped mountaintop removal mining. What? I guess I can stop taking all these trips and going to carry-ins on and protests and whatnot. But, well, some people just can't help themselves. They're going to, and I understand that's the political party above all things class, and they can't help themselves. But that was a weird moment for the. That was just a weird moment to get the day started. Because I look for that day when I open my email and I see something that says, "Hooray! Hillbillies will be free. Hillbillies no longer to be poisoned. Mountaintop removal has been ended." But that day has not yet dawned. Not by a long shot. I wrote a note of correction, and the post now says that mountaintop removal has been restricted. Not really. If you go to Monday's show post and look at the photographs of the very southwestern tip of Virginia, you'll see what restricted looks like. Trust me, it's not much as restricted goes. It's a very restricted definition of restricted, if you get what I mean. Some comments coming in via the email overnight. You know, that's the beauty of not just working live, but having a podcast as well. Oh, by the way, if you're having trouble getting into the chat room is misbehaving for some reason or another. Not the inhabitants thereof, but the chat room itself. If you go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, John Fox has just gotten done installing a side door there too. Your login and everything remains the same. You just got to go a different way to get there. So it's there, and the room is filling up, which is cool. So we've taken care of that. Now, some emails, like I said, coming in last night. You know, of course, that much to my surprise, Mississippians had a sudden bout of brains and rejected the stupid personhood amendment yesterday. That prompted our good buddy Michael, otherwise known as Kid A from the chat room, to note, Mississippi should have tried a chickenhood amendment first. Then we could update the age-old question, which came first, the chicken or the chicken? Yeah. The chicken or the chicken? Of course, then omelets would be murder. Omelets are murder! And you could claim to be a chicken farmer just by getting a couple of refrigerators and stocking them with eggs. Look at all these chickens. Oh, Bob, those are eggs. Nope, in Mississippi, they're chickens. Yeah. But hooray for Mississippi, at least for the time being. I wouldn't party too long or too hard, however, because this is, after all, the right wing, and they don't give up. They don't. They don't give up. They will be back. They'll be back with their personhood amendment, and they will hammer at the gates until they have sufficiently, using religion, terrified enough people into siding with them. this thing was a sort of a test vote, if you will. And while the margin was pretty broad, it did show them that they've got enough of a base with which to work. Remember the Wayne B. Wheeler rule. You don't need a majority. You just need that margin that you have to push the thing across and get it passed. So what Mississippians for Feetizens found out last night is that they need to move about 9, 10, 15% of Mississippians into their camp. And they are, even as we speak, working on it. Hammer and tongs. Our buddy John dropped a note along after last night's program. John, up in New York. He said some quick thoughts on last night's show. I sort of hate to go here, but I made some connections, and it wouldn't surprise me if other hornies did, too. I've only caught part of the first hour so far. Oh, dear. When Limbaugh longs for the old days, when men could grope and demean women all they wanted, his white privilege really shines through. Sorry, Rush, but within Cain's own lifetime, a black man doing what is being alleged was done to a white woman could and did result in death. Cain has a few of those panty-waist liberals to thank for the fact that nothing more than a media frenzy results from his behavior. If true. In fact, more than a few of those panty-waist liberals were beaten or killed. Some were buried in an earthen dam to ensure Cain could be judged for those actions as nothing more than a rotten human being. As for Huckabee, well, I've been to that Popeyes at Hartsfield as well. See, it's a great place. The staff, when I've been through, is entirely black and largely female, and, as Huckabee notes, extremely friendly, and like most food service workers, are trained to be obsequious to customers. Governor Mike seems to really like having servile black women attend to him. I bet sometimes they even call him Sugar. My only wish is that they'd spit in his food once in a while. These people, these right-wingers, just can't seem to step outside their privilege for a second, can they? Asks John. They have everything, and yet somehow they're always the victim. And of course, John has nailed it spot on. They have everything. Well, not quite. You and I would look at them and think they have everything. But we both know, down deep, that they don't have everything. And the difference between us and them is the fact that knowing that they don't have everything eats holes in their bellies. Because, and this will be our first iteration of this tonight, they want it all. They want it all. Whatever they don't have is the reason, and it is not the reason, of course, but it is the reason they perceive for that empty, hollow, pathetic feeling that they have inside the place where maybe their souls ought to be. That sort of graspy, grubby, sick, overreaching, overweening desire to own and control everything. Yeah, John, I imagine old Mike Huckstaby does like it when one of those workers at Popeyes call him Sugar, or Cher, or Dear, or Honey. But John, he'd like it a hell of a lot better if she called him Massa. Yeah. That's the truth. So, Oh, we're off and running. David in Tennessee. The chicken or the chicken, I really like that. I think that's a de facto at least toaster nomination, if not an outright award. David is the exchequer of imaginary toasters here at the Horn. There's also the question, says David, if personhood amendments pass and my wife is pregnant, does she need two tickets at the movie? See, it's an economic engine of growth and creativity. Oh! Now, Jeanette wrote in, she listens late, after hearing the clip of Christiana Monpour fawning all over herself over Kinda Sleazy Rice. Goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken. Jeanette wrote, I thought Amanpour had a reputation as an excellent journalist. How nauseating. Incredible also to notice that Condi doesn't sound extreme compared to Obama Clinton. How infuriating. I don't trust that report, even though it's supposedly by the UN. Sounds like a repeat of Iraq to me. Next up, expect the U.S. to send in U.S. inspectors. The inspectors to find no evidence of a nuclear weapons program. The U.S. to allege sexual perversion by inspectors, the U.S. to pull the inspectors out of Iran, and then claim Ahmadinejad had kicked them out. Yeah, speaking of two tickets to the movies, we've been to that one. Jeanette says, I guess Obama tells the truth once a decade or so, about Netanyahu in this case. I've yet to have someone explain to me why Israel has so much power over the U.S. I hear people say it does all the time, but I always wonder why and how. It's tiny. Well, maybe this is an appropriate time for that explanation. Thank you for the question, Jeanette. Israel was created out of the Balfour Declaration, which was an English thing. If you read Barbara Tuchman, see, she's been coming up a lot in conversation lately because, A, she was brilliant, and, B, her books are equally so. If you read her book, Bible and Sword, you will find detailed therein the history of the relationship between England, the UK, and the idea of a Jewish homeland. It came to its ultimate fruition in the Balfour Declaration of, what, 1920? And that feeling about that homeland is entirely religiously driven. Not driven by policy, not driven by anything in the world except religion. And in the case of the United States, Israel is an object of fetishism. Now, I'm not talking about anybody sitting in a phone in an old dirty movie theater with an overcoat and dark and, you know, that kind of, no. But kind of, yeah. I'm using the more anthropologic meaning of fetish. And the religious community in the United States has completely fetishized the idea of Israel. So that nothing Israel does can ever be construed as being excessive or wrong or brutal or inhumane or illegal. Because it's all grounded in religion. It's another one of those little places where we see the proof of the power of religious theocracy over the policy-making apparatus of our own government. Consequently, even though it should have gone off of our international welfare list decades ago, we are still pumping billions into Israel at the same time that millions of Americans are out of work. At the same time that we're told we can't afford to keep the lights on in a town in Michigan or Illinois, we still have billions going to Israel. To be fair, we also still have them going to Egypt and various and sundry, but Pakistan, for God's sakes. But Israel has proven itself able to stand on its own where the others have not. But still we're writing the check. And we're writing the check because the American religious right sees Israel's existence as a condition precedent to the return of their zombie god to planet Earth. Now, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. It's just a shorthand. But the religious right in the United States feels that it has somehow the collective power to compel the almighty creator of the universe in which they believe to compel that god to do their bidding if they simply put all the puzzle pieces together correctly. And the central puzzle piece is, of course, Israel. Israel is an outlaw, rogue state in the Middle East. It gives not a tinker's damn for the human rights of those living around it. It has nuclear weapons and would set the entire region on fire if sufficiently provoked. The problem being that sufficient provocation is a criteria that they reserve the right to judge. So that is why Israel has the control over the United States that it has. That's why every election season, sooner or later, it won't come from the Jewish community. The Jewish community has its own reasons for supporting the state of Israel, which are far more rational and reasonable than the religious, the fundamentalist Christian right. The fundamentalist Christian right wants Israel to exist so they can make Jesus come back, and when Jesus gets back, if you read all this crazy stuff, what gets the religious right all excited is when Jesus gets back, he looks at all the Jews, and he says, "See, I told you I was right. Now everybody, get on your knees and kiss my foot," for all intents and purposes. And the holy book that the fundamentalists believe is the literal word of God says that at that point, any Jew who does not kiss Jesus' foot, Jesus is going to look to the fundies and say, "Kill him! Kill him real good! Stab him and chop him and slaughter him up and cut him into little bitty pieces, because they won't believe in me because they're hard-headed people." And that is the part that makes American religious fundamentalists run into dark rooms in raincoats and masturbate. Because, hearkening back to the email from Jude last night, the fundamentalist religious right is, in its very essence, at its most basic core, necrophilic. I know you know what the word means. Don't make me define it on the air. Go look it up if you don't. So that, Jeanette, is the answer to why Israel has so much power over the United States. It is embarrassing. It is saddening. Supposedly the greatest nation on the earth. Cannot act in its own best interests and instead has to act in the best interests of Israel. And it's just pathetic. Just pitiful. But Jeanette continues, she says, "I'm so tired of the Cain thing. Rome is burning and we're forced to listen to that shite." Rome really is kind of burning. I mean, you do know the whole Silvio Berlusconi thing. The guy, he's a sort of quasi-fascist, if not an outright fascist. He's run Italy for 20 years. He's run it into the ground. They're getting ready to go broke. And finally, he has said that he will step down as prime minister if the Italian parliament will pass through an austerity package that will screw over Italian working people for a generation. Wow. What a bargain. What a bargain. By Grapthar's Hammer. Jeanette says, if people were using it, Kane, that is, as an opportunity to have a substantive discussion of sexual harassment and sexism, and keeping it in terms of time spent on the story in proportion to other issues, that would be okay, but that's not what's being discussed, and more critical issues are not getting enough time. All I hear is that his story keeps changing. Will it, won't it affect the horse race, the sordid details of the allegations and jokes? I don't give a rat's ass what that slime limb barf says about it. Well, you know, Jeanette, you better care what Limbarf says about it. Because Limbarf is nothing more than a mouthpiece for a whole lot of America. And when you take him in context, such as we did last night, you learn just how sick this country is. Because this country is gravely sick. The attitudes that Flush Flembaugh manifested in that clip last night are opinions and attitudes held by Americans measured in their millions. It sort of gives you a barometer of how far we have to go. Jeanette continues, we know Kane's a piece of human waste. It's no surprise that he is saying that disgusting, vomitous stuff about sexual harassment, and even more, pedophilia. He's probably a pedophile. In my opinion, playing clips of Limbaugh is like giving him another radio station for free. No, that's not what it is, Jeanette. It is education. Now, we can toddle along and whistle our happy, merry tune and think that everything's great and we're gonna change things. But if you don't know what the other side is saying, you're not dealing with reality. And I don't mean you specifically. I mean the general you. She says, in my opinion, the Kane issue is one more case of look over here. We've got blood or titillation, and everyone's taking the bait. Well, I don't see the Kane story as a story about Kane. I see the Kane story as a story about America. Because there is a whole bunch of America that still thinks that women are objects to receptacles for the unmitigated sexual urges of privileged males. And the trick about male privilege is that it extends from the wealthiest down to the very poorest on the economic scale, because generally speaking, males have more privilege than females. White people have more privilege than persons of color. When you add the people with a lot of money have more privilege than people without the money. And what you are seeing play out in the Kane wreck is nothing more or less than a morality play, a medieval morality play on the operation and effects of privilege. Jeanette asks, what about the Super Committee and G8? What about the earthquakes and fracking? What about the tar sands? What about Fukushima? What about the dog knows how many wars? What about the Assange verdict and upcoming evidentiary hearing re-Manning? What about the other soldier they recently took into custody? What about Scott Olson and the other vet with the ruptured spleen? I've heard nothing about several of those issues, but lots about Kane. He doesn't deserve the attention. And that's why there are lots and lots of radio shows. Because one or another of them will cover one of those at some point in time. Some do more of one thing, some do more of another. We, of course, have talked extensively about the about fracking and about the tar sands pipeline. And I personally am quite proud of the fact that I have spent more time talking about mountaintop removal than any other broadcaster on the planet. Just in terms of time spent I'm it. And I'm proud of that. Speaking of oil and oil and gas and how whatever, just a little note to let you know, a gentle reminder, if you will, that D behind somebody's name does not necessarily confer the moral high ground. In this particular instance, I am referring to a different Cain. This is Cain with a K and an E. This is Tim Cain, K-A-I-N-E. This is the guy who was chairman of the Democratic National Committee at the time when pathetic strategizing led to the loss of the House of Representatives. Tim Cain, you see, wants to be a member of the Senate of the United States of America. And he wants Virginians to know exactly where he stands in his candidacy. So he issues press releases, as one might expect. The other day, the Department of Interior released data regarding its latest lease sale to develop what are referred to as offshore energy resources. Isn't it interesting that when the Department of Interior talks about offshore energy resources, they're not talking about space to put up, oh, I don't know, tidal-driven power generators or windmills offshore that will turn forever day in and day out and generate electricity ad infinitum? Isn't it interesting that they're not talking about that? No, hell no. They're talking about the same old, dirty, sorry, poisonous, filthy oil and natural gas drilling that they always talk about. And Virginia was excluded from the latest list. And Tim Cain is not happy, and he wants you to know it. He's not happy. Now, I don't know about you, but if you lived on the Virginia coast or one of those estuary areas along the Virginia coast, I'd be dancing in the streets because it would mean that little tar balls wouldn't be rolling up on my beach or wouldn't be in the water, the groundwater that maybe I drink or bathe in. That there wouldn't be massive spills that would cause the most pathetic sights and scenes of innocent creatures covered in goo washing up on the shore and drowning on dry land. But no, Tim Cain is upset. Because Tim Cain's got conservative Democratic Party values. While it is encouraging to hear the Obama administration is expanding opportunities for domestic energy production, not going to have a hissy. Come on, Bob, settle down. It's just semantics. Domestic energy production. That phrase never includes wind or solar or geothermal. I guess that's not domestic because the wind is up in the sky and the sun, well, Jesus, the sun's millions of miles away, billions maybe in space. And we don't own the sun yet, so it's not domestic anymore. While it is encouraging to hear the Obama administration is expanding opportunities for domestic energy production, I am disappointed that Virginia has been excluded from the latest lease sale for offshore exploration. I strongly encourage the Department of Interior to add Virginia to its plans. As governor, I supported and advanced measures to allow exploratory drilling for natural gas. And as a candidate for U.S. Senate, I remain supportive of efforts to develop our offshore energy resources as a temporary bridge to cleaner renewable energy sources. bridge. It's all about the bridge. Never mind what's on the other side of the bridge, which we can already get to. We don't need a bridge. You don't need a bridge across dry land. You just go to it. There's not some great chasm out there right now between the filthy, coal-fired, oil-powered past and a clean, green economy that can be in our future. I commend to you, the column of Dr. Paul Krugman of a couple of days past, entitled, Here Comes the Sun. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that everything is done, or that there's not more research that needs to be accomplished. But we have the power, if for instance, you've heard the horns sage from southwest Wisconsin, Brother Albert, if you've heard him call in, he talks about that day when every house will have solar panels on it, and that there will be so much generation coming from so many sources that we will have an excess of energy. And here's the hint. If you recall the conversation with Brother Albert a couple of weeks ago, they've already had that happen in Germany and France. There was so much excess electricity recently that the utilities were paying people in their houses to take the electricity. They had too much wind and solar power. Meanwhile, over here in 19th century America, Tim Kaine is building a bridge to nowhere. Because anything that's a bridge that's made out of fossil fuels is a bridge to disaster. I remain supportive of efforts to develop our offshore energy resources as a temporary bridge to cleaner renewable energy resources. Earlier this year, I gave my firm support to Senators Webb and Warner's bill to increase the potential area for exploration, ensure a fair split of any future proceeds between the federal government and the Commonwealth of Virginia. Their bill rightly dedicates Virginia's share of future revenues to important priorities like land and water conservation, infrastructure improvements, and development of clean energy technology. Well, hoop-de-doo. So in other words, what candidate Kaine is saying here is that he wants to pimp school children outside the school so that later on children won't have to be pimped outside the school. I got an idea. Let's stop pimping children. We don't need to drill off the Virginia coastline. We don't need to drill off the Florida coastline. We don't need to drill off the Alabama, the Georgia, the Mississippi, the Louisiana, the Texas coastline. We don't need to drill off the California, the Oregon, the Washington coastline. We need to get serious about not poisoning people anymore. There is a continuing debate, you see, about these things called externalities. And hydrocarbon energy companies really don't like to talk about them. Because externalities are the things that oil and gas and coal companies foist onto the population so they can continue to reap monstrous profits. Things like cancer. Things like heart disease. Things like asthma. Things like the costs of cleanups. Things like species extinction. Things like the inexorable warming of a tormented planet. These are all foisted onto you and me so that some CEO of some coal or gas or oil company can make sure he continues to have lobster for lunch every day, flown in fresh from Maine on its own Gulfstream jet. See, Tim Kaine wants to have his cake and eat it, too. He closes his little old press release by saying, I believe that clean, renewable energy will power our future. In the meantime, responsible domestic production can help create jobs. Let him go now. Let him go now. Letting everything go. Staring at my, going to my happy place, and there's beer and donuts and... Responsible domestic production. Well, you know, it just so happens that I just got back from Virginia. And I've seen what Tim Kaine thinks is responsible domestic production. It's the damnedest thing you ever saw. As you're heading into down from Norton, Virginia, to Big Stone Gap, Virginia, you're on a four-lane highway, and you crest this hill, and right there, I mean smack dab up in front of your face, is this giant, ginormous, humongous, creepy-looking, brand-new coal-fired poison plant. I'm sorry, coal-fired power plant. It sits on the ground in Wise County, Virginia, sort of in a little basin, and it's going to poison the region. Because, Dominion Energy, who's building it, well, it's a state-of-the-art coal-fired power plant, Bob. Oh, good for you. Goody, goody. Goody good for you, Dominion Energy. It's a state-of-the-art coal-fired power plant. That means it'll only kill 10,000 people a year instead of 50,000. Thank God for state-of-the-art. People in Wise County, Virginia don't want that plant. They have protested diligently, peacefully, trying to make their voices heard. They have been met with arrests and police and assaults by police. And bear in mind, that plant's not being built because Wise County and the surrounding counties are just using electricity hand over fist. The people of Wise County, Virginia, are sacrificing their health, their bodies, their homes, their communities, their friends, their families, their neighbors, their heritage, and their future by force. Remember externalities? Because we need to light up some more goddamn neon lights at night in New York City or Philly or Baltimore or Washington, D.C. Because Times Square isn't bright enough in the still and dark of the night. Because the ravenous desire for electricity never ceases among the 1%. And what's going to feed that monster in Wise County, Virginia? Well, get on Google Earth. Or, no, better yet, go to headonradionetwork.com, go to the Monday Post, and you can see photographs of what feeds that monster. It literally eats mountains. It would be no different were it a living thing on 4 or 16 legs crawling over the ridges of Appalachia and gobbling up mountains and little communities and spitting out the lives of people as it moves along. Monday night, 25% of the entire landmass of Wise County, Virginia is gone, already gone, and they want the rest. Because they are the 1%, and they want it all. And when they when that revolting the filthy coal-fired power plant has eaten up Wise County, Virginia, it'll cross the line and it'll finish off eating Harlan County, Kentucky, and Hazard County, Kentucky, and it'll eat up West Virginia because its filthy, filthy, ravenous maw can never be satisfied. And that is the responsible domestic production that Tim Kaine, Democrat, so thoroughly and enthusiastically believes in. In the meantime, responsible domestic production can help create jobs, generate revenue, improve national security. Revenuers! We shoot revenuers. Improve national security and address our energy needs while clean energy technology is developed. Just not too fast, mind you. I added that part. I hope the Department of Interior and the Obama administration will recognize the bipartisan support for developing Virginia's offshore energy resources and add Virginia to the current lease sale. Jesus, I wonder what we'd find if we looked inside Tim Kaine's little old blind stock portfolio trust type thing. Don't you? Yes, Kim, I said beer and donuts. I'm in a bad place, Kim. I'm in a bad place. Michael writing in. In the early 1960s, I didn't realize what the white privilege was. I was only 4 or 5, but seeing all the black folks walk past our house every afternoon from where the bus dropped them off at the corner of paved and our unpaved road, they had about a mile to walk to Colored Town, where they lived, after their day of working outside our small town. Back then, it was taken for granted that colored people were dirty. I didn't give it much thought as a child. Now I realize that it's because they didn't have public water. They probably didn't have electricity either. Mind you, this is around the time of the Kennedy assassination. There's your white privilege. Like 20th century amenities that all us white folk take for granted. I tell these stories because many young people don't understand how it was not that long ago. Thanks, Bob, liberal in South Carolina. And not that long ago, and not that far in the future. Let's just remember that. It's about 12 minutes before the hour. And there's just so much out there. But I want to share this with you. This is a subject shift. Because what started out as the Penn State sex scandal story has morphed into the Joe Paterno story. Joe Paterno has recently said that, I got this note from David in Tennessee. David, looking back, said it was around 1971 or 1972, I forget which. But he says, I took a rare Saturday off from family work and classes to go solo to a University of Tennessee football game. Shields-Watkins Stadium held like 74,000 way back then. Team was on an upswing. I headed to the stadium without a ticket, having invested in 2 tickets 2 blocks from the gates. They went in the air, and there went the chant. 2 on the 25, Sunnyside. That process repeated itself twice more in 3 minutes of playing time into the game. I was on the inside on the 40 with more in my pocket than I had when leaving home. Penn State was in town. First night game at Shields-Watkins. Vols and Paterno's outfit ranked about the same, but Penn State was favored. Both teams that season would put men in the league. University of Tennessee was up 21-0 at half. A lot of hooting and hollering about, take that, Yankee! That's the clean version. Here came Penn State. Second half. Drive followed by score, followed by defensive stop, followed by a drive, followed by a score. Middle of the fourth quarter, tied 21-21. Vols scored 28-21 Vols. The vaunted Tennessee defense had to get a stop, and that would be the game. Well, here come Penn State again, sporting resolve at its finest. Had that game had 61 minutes of play in time, there would have been a tie. But by the time the final gun, all the Vol fans had some serious respect for all things Penn State. Next day in the paper, Coach Paterno was gracious as to how the game was played and refereed. He was complimentary as to how his squad had been treated. At that point in the early 70s, I felt good about respecting Coach Paterno. And I know that feeling because for a long time, West Virginia played Penn State every year, and we mostly got our butts handed to us. And while you loathed them, by the same token, you had to respect that Joe Paterno had created something very, very special in State College, Pennsylvania. But David continues, he says, last night I heard radio coverage of a tottering old man speaking to a cheering throng outside his house yesterday. That right there almost triggered a gag reflex in me. Students are cheering a man that's at the least dangerously neglectful of his duties and at worst criminally liable? Then it got worse. Paraphrasing Coach Paterno's words, my wife and I have 17 grandchildren. We pray for them every night. We will pray tonight for the kids' comfort and well-being that may have been hurt by the actions we've learned about. Well, that's just damn great, Coach. That's it? You will pray, and it sounds like you think that breaks you even for turning your head to child rape 10 years ago, brought to you by an eyewitness you sent a note and told the boss. Then you went back to game film and having an ice cream at the Penn State Dairy Bar. What the, Coach? If that had been, just as Chris Berman on ESPN queried, your grandson, his hands on the shower wall, you think maybe you'd have done more than write a note, chat with the boss, and drop it? Just asking, Joe. All the respect as a sports icon and a person earned by that man in the early 70s has burned away in a firestorm of justified and intense dislike last night. He prayed for the kids, and in his mind, it's all better. And Joe, enjoy your time at midfield Saturday during Senior Day. Should be celebratory as few other senior days have been in Happy Valley. See, Penn State is home Saturday, and then their last two games are on the road. You got to figure there's going to be some interesting signs in the stadium. Like I've said before, that's no football story. That's a story of authority and the abuse of power. Because there is tremendous power in college athletics, especially D1 college athletics. Because priorities go completely sideways. Joe Paterno announcing today that he would retire at the end of the season. But that ain't enough. And it remains open as to whether that will be enough for the board at Penn State. Might be time to go right now. Right now. Sickening. And that is the question. Those 17 grandchildren, if you know, if that had been some child that Joe Paterno knew or cared about or was related to, hell wouldn't have held him. Until it was stopped and the perpetrator brought to justice. But it wasn't. It was just some poor kid. And it was, after all, his much, much heralded defensive coordinator, Jerry Sandusky, who was behind the 10-year-old kid with his hands on the wall of the shower. And since it's just some poor kid, then we'll kick it upstairs to the AD and let him deal with it. Time to go, Joe. Time to go. And it's time for us to take a break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. It's Wednesday, by the way. I neglected to mention it's Wednesday. I said it's Wednesday, but I didn't mention what this Wednesday is. It is, of course, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And how fitting that Joe Paterno has prayed. He's prayed for the children, the little boys, his defensive coordinator, raped. Lines are open. Chime in if you've got some thoughts. You're welcome to it. We are listener supported, and we thank you for keeping all of this going. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Operator, give me information. Information. Give me love. Long distance, give me air. 1, 2, 3,
oh, operator.
Operator.
Information.
Information.
Give me Jesus.
Jesus on the line.
Operator,
operator,
information,
information,
please give me Jesus.
Jesus on the
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Cool Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Four minutes past the hour. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And I got some prayer meeting stuff needs getting to. But I hate to keep folks sitting on hold. You know the phone number, by the way, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N. The O is an actual letter, not the zero on your keypad. Head on. If you want to save us the cost of toll-free access, the direct dial number is 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And just a reminder, if you're having trouble getting into the chat room this evening, that's because the front door is busted. We had some terrible winds and come along, and you know how the wind will kind of, if it's not lashed real good, the wind will grab your front door and just fling it plumb out there sideways. And well, the springs got sprung on the front door of the chat room, and consequently, John Fox had to come along and hurriedly install a side door. So you'll have to come in the side door, but you can still get there via the headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. You just kind of scroll down a little ways, and it says side door. Yeah. So just come in the side door of the chat room. If you've never been to the chat room, it's a whale of a darn fine time. Got some good folks in there. Check it out as you see fit. There's no charge. It's just another way we try to sort of maximize the real-time experience of the Horn. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening.
Hey, David, what's happening?
Not much. just experiencing another day of cataclysms around the world.
Well, but you got your same day voter registration saved last night, though, right?
Yeah. No, just a lot of stuff that's going on. I actually went to a restaurant, and I came up with an analogy of what's happening to our country and our world at the restaurant. And I was sitting there at the restaurant, and I had the buffet, and I was like, this is pretty good. And then, but the one thing you notice about one thing you notice about at a restaurant when you're having a buffet is they always watch the water levels. So if your water's going low, they're going to fill it right back up. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what's happening with our media. They're filling up distractions over and over so you can't enjoy the buffet that you're supposed to be having.
That's an interesting analogy. So there's no content. It just looks like there is, right?
Yeah. And you're wondering, wow, I'm full now. That's pretty good. I had a good meal. And they do that, you know how they do that with the spicy food and food of that nature. And that's what I think.
And then and then 2 hours later, you're, wait a minute, didn't I just eat?
Yeah. And I think that's the problem. We've had so much filler in this world now for content. I've talked about this before, but there was a documentary on BBC, and this is why I keep saying this, because I keep reminding people that if you think America is the problem, you're not paying attention, because it's the entire world where it concerns media. And in the documentary at the end, Bob, they asked the kids, and they showed a study from the kids from the 72 and 73, and they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, I want to be a fireman. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be this. I want to be that. Now, here's the interesting thing about the study. That was from 1972. Check to cross to today. Today's study, where they did kids around the world. So don't start with this, oh, it's just American kids. That's the problem. It's American kids. No, listen. All kids across in every single country you can imagine. They showed them in the classroom. And they said, what do you want to be today? And about 75% of those kids did not say one of those professions. They said, I'd like to be famous. Now, dig that.
Wow. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of wow in that, David.
I want to be famous.
And then here's the point. So then you sit down and you talk to the kid. Okay, what do you want to be famous about? Nothing, just famous.
And you know what? We live in a global culture where you can be famous for nothing. I guess it's an extension of the larger principle that, or an enlargement of the principle that Andy Warhol first identified,
mm-hmm.
when he said that in the future everyone will be famous for 15 minutes.
Exactly. And if you look at it, and you know, the cross back to segue to Herman Cain, Sarah Palin, all the Rick Perry. And you think about it for a minute, like, what are these people known for in their history? Somebody generated them and made them famous now.
And speaking of whom, is Caribou Barbie out there eating her own liver now?
I don't know. I just imagine that they that they send a money truck to her door and they say, thank you for helping us this election cycle do more distractions.
Oh, you betcha.
Yeah, and they just open the money truck door and they don't see that as in this. They don't see that as entitlements or subsidies or anything or welfare or anything like that. They see that as it's divine monetary compensation.
But I mean the Mike Huckabees and the Sarah Palins to look over. I mean, they're going to have another one of their little pageants tonight, right, David?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I almost forgot about that. Yes.
I've been trying real hard, but it won't go away. It's going to be broadcast, I guess, by CNBC. And Sarah and Huckabee must be looking at that crowd going, why did I talk myself out of this? I could be Sarah Palin's got to be saying, oh, I could get elected president and then quit 9 months later.
Well, you have to wonder if the Republicans are paying attention to what's happening in Europe and the meltdown that is about to occur, and I think they're a little bit hesitant on getting that presidency. Just a little bit.
Well, it's kind of like 2008 then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because everybody in their right mind knew that the excrement was going to strike the fan blades. And what Republican would want to be... No, they needed somebody to come in that they could scream about who might actually put the House in order a little bit so that they could come back in, say, 2016 and steal us blind again. But it's turning out not quite to be that way because the House is not getting in order and the problems are worse now than they were in 2008. I mean, they're as bad or worse than they've been since 1932. And yeah, who does want to be at the tiller when Europe melts down? Yeah, Greece, Italy. It turns out there really is a domino effect, but it has nothing to do with communism. It's all driven, in fact, by capitalism. And after Italy comes Portugal, maybe Ireland, and then, well, who knows?
Right, who knows? You know, the only thing that I can look at is a good thing.
I was just going to say, just on quivers about Italy today,
yeah,
the stock market dumped 3% of its value just somewhere. You know, somebody got it. It doesn't just vanish. Somebody got rich today. Some short seller or the bet, you know, somebody hedging a bet somewhere on the roulette wheel that is Wall Street. But yeah, just on worries, not on actual anything, just on being nervous, David, Wall Street had a conniption.
You know, that's why there's a lot of these disaster capitalists who can't wait for the total meltdown. They can't wait. This is like their divine moment. Their God is almighty greed, and he's finally coming back from the rapture. The ultimate greed, where everyone is going to be, I don't even know what it's going to look like in, let's not even say 2 or 3 years. I'm talking about what's it going to look like in a year.
Right. No, the long-term stuff is gone now.
Yeah, it's like that iceberg. The iceberg that's cracking away. People say, in Antarctica, they say, oh, well, we got some time. No, we don't have any time. It's already cracking off. Don't worry about that asteroid. Holy cow. The fact they generated, you know, that's a serious problem in our media, Bob. The fact that you can put out a story like that and not anyone blow the whistle and say, why are you putting out this hokum story? You get everyone worked up over nothing again.
It's the Seinfeldization, I guess, of science reporting, David, because it's a story about nothing.
You know, speaking of Seinfeld, you just made me think of this. You know, I think of the I Want It All type guys is that episode where George was with that wallet. He wanted everything in his wallet.
Yeah.
And he put it with the guitar coupon. That was the last thing he put in his wallet. And he tried to close it, and it just popped. And everything went everywhere. Now, that, to me, is a perfect symbolic example of where we're at.
Because it's all going to pop.
Yeah, it's all gonna pop. The bubble. The wallet bubble. Or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, you look at what's happening right now and it's like I said, the only thing that I can see that's a good thing about it is we're building communities out of our misery or our upcoming misery coming soon.
Well, the nice thing about ashes is you can make bricks out of them.
Right.
I guess.
And it seems like we're going to have plenty to work with in terms of what's coming down the pike, and hopefully we'll have a lot to ponder and think about how we're going to rebuild whatever's coming, because it's obviously, you know, one step after the other, it seems to be in the direction of you can't stop it now, because we've set down the model of what we want in terms of an economy. And it doesn't work for 7 billion people on the planet. It's crazy, because if you think about it, there is no doubt about it, but we are going to have to live in a shared society.
And they're not very good at sharing, David.
Yeah, I know. There's no so we have a dilemma on our hands. How do we get more people to share if they continue to destroy nation after nation? If they don't get it all, I guess they're going to destroy it all.
Well, no, they will destroy it all in their attempt to get it all. It's part of...
Yeah.
I think that's important to bear in mind. It's part of a plan, David.
Mm.
And I'm not being all paranoid and stuff. Just because I live around the effects of extractive industries, you got to do some destroying to make some profits. I mean, they have the nerve around here, for instance. Well, you know, nobody likes a construction site while it's under construction. It's messy and it's ugly, but when it's done and we get the trees planted and the water lines are all in, why, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. That's how they describe so-called reclamation. That's reclamation.
Mm.
Reclamation on a mountaintop removal site. But the fact of the matter is, what it is what's left over after the destruction. And the destruction generates capital. I've been trying to message a little bit on this lately. There is no, I know the banks are easy, but there is no greater manifestation of the concept of the 1% than a mountaintop removal site.
Right.
Now that place could have been used for hiking, for watershed, public water maintenance. It could just sit there and be beautiful for everybody. And everybody could have the benefit of it. But instead, the 1% wanted what was inside it, and therefore, you know, those externalities pumped poison into the air, pumped poison into the water, pumped poison into our bodies, so that they could keep eating those lark's vomit canapes.
So when you see a new coal company open up, I mean... A new factory open up and for business. Where does that put your mindset in terms of where you live and your surroundings? Are you ever going to can you overcome these factories that continue if they continue to open new ones?
And hard to say.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like that post I saw earlier today. And Obama ended mountaintop removal.
I heard that. That was just that just makes you shake your head. It's like,
what?
You know, we talk about fact. That's the problem I have with a lot of bloggers and a lot of writers. We talk about fact checking, and just because you like someone, or just because you nominated your favorite rock star into office, that doesn't stop your fact checking, ladies and gentlemen. It shouldn't. Immediately, you should be like, "Oh, did he really stop mountaintop removal?" Well, maybe.
But the thing is, this is not a criticism or anything; it's just a fact.
Yeah.
That post had oodles of comments on it, and I tried to scan them all to make sure. No, you didn't catch it. You didn't catch it. You didn't catch it. You didn't catch it. It was largely a Hosanna, Amen, Corner choir of people saying, "Yeah, that's right. Those people who criticize Obama are dickheads." And that's what happens in echo chambers.
Yeah, you clap for the new brand. Whether it's Nike, whether it's Reebok, you know how a lot of people go crazy about ever go on a video game message board and see how when someone enters a Nintendo forum, who's a Sony person.
Oh God, I can't even contemplate it. I saw a story. You said the magic word Nike.
Yeah.
I saw a story in the New York Times a couple of days ago about, and I know this is going to seem completely off topic, but it's not,
mm-hmm.
about barefoot running. Because over the last couple of decades, there has been a school of thought, because running is something, it's a big damn business is what it is.
Right.
And what makes it a big damn business is largely the sale of shoes. And the sale of shoes has been driven by constant efforts to try to minimize the injuries that happen to runners, because they tend to strike, when they're running, they strike with their heels and launch off the balls of their toes. And the force of the heel impacting the surface, the pavement, is tremendously damaging.
Mm.
And at the heart and soul of this is, of course, Nike and Reebok and the Adidas and the rest of that bunch. But what it turns out, and this is the kind of science that you know, the people who want it all hate, there's a really, really growing school of thought, David, that says that the best way to run is barefoot.
Mm.
Because that's the way humans evolved to run. Humans, and this is not that same, you know, if man was meant to fly, God would have made him with wings on his back. This is not that. We evolved with a big brain and the ability to run long distances. We weren't as fast in the short run as the cheetah or, you know, that kind of thing. But we could run long distances and use our big brains to outsmart our prey.
Right.
And we did it without shoes. The only time shoes came into play is, for instance, if you, you know, the Iceman that was discovered up in the Alps 5,000 years old, he was wearing shoes.
Right, he had the huaraches, right.
No, he had the straight up, you know, Rocky brand insulated, no. But he had shoes on that were insulated to protect him from marching through snow.
Mm.
And you do need that or your feet will freeze. But if you're just running out in temperate climes or warm weather climes, the shoes don't help. And so what happened, to make this incredibly long story as short as possible, these people began noting that barefoot, that it is possible to run barefoot in the way that human beings evolved and not have the injuries that seem to run rampant through the running world. And the science began, it was introduced in a particular running magazine. And the minute that it was introduced, guess what happened?
Eradicated.
Nike pulled all of its advertising. Every last bit. Because in the end, you know, running's healthy. Running's good for you. Running increases your cardiovascular, blah, 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 blah. But if Nike doesn't have a reason to make a profit off of all of that good, healthy behavior, then goodbye.
You could still sell Nike hats and Nike shirts. They just don't see the bigger picture, Bob.
But the Nike hats and the Nike shirts don't sell for near as much as the Nike shoes.
Oh, I understand. I understand. Last night you were talking about, this made me think of something. You were playing that song, Company Town.
Yeah, Andrew McKnight.
Yeah, and it made me think of, that he needs to revise it to Company World.
That's true.
I mean, it's, you know, you look around and look how everything is just, We are definitely, if we're not there, we are so close on that track.
No, I think we're there.
Okay, but then the question is how do you dismantle that effectively, timely, and can you do that?
I think it can be done, but that really is long-term planning, and it's global planning. One of the things pointed out in that article that contained the phrase Obama ended mountaintop removal was an argument in favor of the Tar Sands XL pipeline because, and this is the way the argument goes, if you don't get the oil there, that just means there's going to be more messier drilling in places like Nigeria. But it's not an either-or situation. The people who want it all, whether it be all the money or all the oil, are going to drill in Nigeria one way or the other. One is not exclusive of the other.
Right.
And it's not, and the oil produced in both, in either Nigeria or the tar sands areas of Alberta, well, that pipeline's not coming through America to then disseminate the oil into America, David. It's coming through America, not to America. It's coming through America to go to what, Houston?
Right.
Where it's going to get on a boat and go somewhere else.
That
you see, the Canadians could just as well build a pipeline out to, say, British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
But the Canadian people won't put up with it. So as a consequence, it's easier to buy politicians in the United States and maybe hire an intimate campaign staffer from Hillary Clinton to run the whole operation. And then it just so happens that Hillary Clinton is the Secretary of State who is in charge of determining whether this thing goes down. And voila, pipeline.
I actually wonder if we can stop the hollowing out, hollowing of the insides that we're currently doing to this country right now. And I don't know. I don't think it hurt. It doesn't hurt to try, but
we will not stop it by sitting still.
Right. Movements have. There needs to be constant movements everywhere, and you can't. There can't be a lull period anymore. It just has to constantly have one movement after the next, because those movements birth other movements, which birth those movements.
And bear in mind, this is one of those situations. I don't offer this as some sort of damnation or anything. These are merely facts.
Right.
Bear in mind that of all the groups that are supporting the construction of the tar sands pipeline, among our side, or the people we generally think as being on our side, a whole bunch of big labor groups are all behind it. Because it's going to create jobs. But the fact of the matter is, they're not long-term jobs. They're not the kind of long-term jobs that you get in maintenance of green energy installations. They're short-term construction jobs, and then it's bye-bye.
It's like the company town symptom all over again.
Exactly.
Except for the whole country. That's a tough one. I wonder what the sentiment is going to be if most of the Democrats fall in line, like a lot of people are saying, and they let this pipeline come in the country, and they kind of are a bit misleading to the population and saying, "Oh yeah, you're going to have jobs, but we're not going to tell you the defined terms of how long you're going to have them."
They're not even playing around the edges of that. It's a construction job. Construction jobs come and construction jobs go. Now, however many years it will take to construct this thing is how long those jobs will last, or sections of it, or however you measure it. And then there will be another pipeline, or there will be a drilling rig. Instead of getting serious about what the future has to look like. And that's what drives me just bananas out of this whole thing.
Well, you know, I think pretty much the step has to be continuing to get the message out and continuing to get out the word and your energy and your inspired stories out to the public and just continuing to build on that. And I think that's the best chance for it all. It goes back to discussion and conversation that brings forth movements or blueprints of future movements, and I think that's where it all needs to continue.
Well, I think that's the only alternative we have, David. It's that or sit down and take it. But the other thing that will happen if they do build this pipeline, however long it operates, the first year that it's in full operation, there will be news stories. And, of course, they will be put there by K Street outfits and so forth. And the news story will be, it's the one-year anniversary of the Keystone Tar Sands XL pipeline. And here on the one-year anniversary, look at all the wildlife around the pipeline. You'd barely know that it's there. And there have been no accidents. The Tar Sands Keystone XL pipeline is completely safe, and many families have had jobs because of its construction. Yay, hooray. And maybe the president will be there to ballyhoo it and cut a blue ribbon when they first turn the valve to let the poisonous goo begin running down its heated length. And on the fifth anniversary, see? No accidents with the tar sand. All is normal, citizen. Go back to watching America's Got Talent. Right?
Right.
But then when the disaster comes, and not if, but when, it will probably be worse than anything anyone thus far has predicted, because that's the way they work. Global warming is worse than the modelings suggested.
Right.
The BP disaster was worse than anyone thought it could be. The Exxon Valdez was worse than anyone imagined. And when the tar sands Keystone XL pipeline ruptures somewhere and sends that filthy goo covering some portion of the planet and rendering it toxic forevermore, you know, Anderson Cooper will parachute in and rip his shirt off and tell us what a travesty it was and remind us how people protested it. But then as soon as that's not interesting anymore, he'll be gone away. You know, I'll remind you that there are not legions of reporters still hanging around down in Whitesville, West Virginia, at the Upper Big Branch mine because it became non-sexy.
Right.
It quit bleeding, because if it bleeds in the for-profit media, it leads. So you get the idea.
Yeah, I do get the idea, and it makes you, well, you know, the Anderson Cooper thing, he's probably going to have like a slam poetry poem that he's put together for the pipeline.
Or maybe there'll be a calliope playing in the background.
Yeah, there will be a calliope playing in the background. Okay, oh, I did want to say,
thanks for reminding me of that.
I did want to say, I just watched a little bit of that Fabric of the Universe, and that's pretty fascinating indeed. I'm looking forward to that. But the other thing I wanted to mention was I just caught the first episode of Hell on Wheels, and I don't know if you're familiar with this show. It's on AMC, and it's about the building of the Union Pacific Railroad.
Oh, wow.
It's a really impressive drama. Common stars in it. I think he's going to get like Emmys, Golden Globes, you name it. He does a really good role. So for people who want to check it out, turn to AMC and you'll watch a pretty interesting show called Hell on Wheels about the building of the Union Pacific Railroad. And they make it look really, really authentic with the tents and the train. I mean, whoever put this together really did a bang-up job.
Cool. I'll check it out. Good to talk to you, David.
All right, Bob. Later.
Later. Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine and rolling right along. Oh, you'll have that. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yes. Sandra.
Hey. So, I'm sorry to start in on this, but there's 4 games left, and this MF-er thinks he needs to hang on until the end of the season? Are you fucking kidding me?
I know. No, we'll see. At least the board can say, no, Joe, it's time to go, buddy.
I mean, somebody needs to give him a little a gentle push, because his little statement is like, yeah, whatever. You should be concerned about the children who were brutalized under your watch, not what you can do for them.
Well, he's concerned, Sandra. He and his wife have prayed for them.
Yeah, no, anyway, I don't know. I just am kind of, you know, because the more I hear about it, just completely, it's appalling. Now they want to bring in Tom Ridge. I mean, it's just replacing, you know, some sleazy elites with more elites. And, you know, why, where are the charges for these people in high places yet again? You know, they just sort of skate, you know.
And, that, well, because in institutional situations that involve millions, if not billions of dollars, Sandra, damage control is more important than little boys.
Oh, well, no, obviously. I mean, you know, it's sort of, the whole football thing, you know, it just makes you really want to evaluate your own participation in it. I have to say, I'm like, oh, my God, I don't know if I can handle it anymore.
I know.
It's pretty ugly when you start, you know, when you know, 10-year-olds, little 12-year-olds, you know, little kids are being victimized. That's a bit, you know, way past.
But you know what? For as vacuous as they can be, I got to say, Sandra, I'm proud of ESPN out of this.
When
Chris Berman said if that had been Joe Paterno's grandkid, there would have been more than a phone call to the AD.
Shut up. I didn't know. Okay. So they went there, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's what you had said.
Matt,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, Matt Millen a couple of days ago looked like he was going to come over the broadcast desk and just start punching somebody that just out of, you know, as a stand-in for Joe. Because, he got double punked, okay, because he's a broadcaster. He is a loyal, I mean loyal Penn State alum. He was a magnificent player in his own day. And he got suckered into a seat on that Second Mile Foundation board. So he's got a piece of the action, so to speak. And he was hot.
Yeah, well, no, but I mean, it's all sort of, yeah, it's just, it's just really gruesome, and it's just not that organization. To me, the whole, you know, college football is really, is under it with this one. This is bad. I can't even believe this one. Really. It's off the chain. But,
you think about the players and stuff, and, but by the same token, I found myself thinking, this is bad enough that maybe the answer is, you know what? Penn State's done playing football this year. Let's just all go home.
Yeah, no, I'm just sort of this kind of, you know, talking about honor and, you know, using it in the same. I'm like, no, you know, I mean, are you people really understanding what has gone down, how it's transpired here? This is way, way past the, you know, sports metaphors. They need to drop them and start talking about, you know, what's really going on.
Well, there's not a little boy out there, especially that grew up in the South, mm-hmm. that at some point in time hasn't had some coach in some sport explain to him that the reason he is playing, and I'm sure it's done with little girls, too. I just don't share that commonality of experience. But some coach, well, you know, you're not just here to play. You're here because sports builds character.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole, I mean, yeah, that's the whole, at least veneer that you shove your children into these games with, the idea. There has to be a greater good involved than whatever else is going on.
Have you heard it said that children who participate in athletics in high school have higher grade point averages and fewer run-ins with the law?
Well, listen, hey, you know what? I played sports since I was 8. Okay, so it's been a big part of my life, and so yeah, I'm down with what it does for you individually as far as keeping you focused. You know, I mean, I had hurt my knee, and that was the end of that for any sort of college play. But I love sports, and it's just, you know, the Twins are playing sports now, and I mean, it's just sort of a fact of life. But, you know, let's get some perspective. And you know, and of course, me and Carrie, we were talking about, you know, we already fish-eyeing some of these folks who deal with the children in any capacity. So it's just blown out of proportion when you see this shit, you know, because you really see what matters to these organizations. And as a guardian and parent, you got to reassess or you're to blame. I'm sorry, Bob. I know that sounds rough, but I'm like, oh, no.
No, see, no, everybody's got a piece of it, Sandra.
You know?
I saw a comment from David in Tennessee the other day that I kind of went, yeah, and shook my head. He said, I'm getting to the point where I'm at a point where I am ready to question any authority figure who deals with young people. That's a severe and a significant assertion.
And it's a problem too, because if you're that weary, you see what I mean? This is undermining basic operations of society, you know. But I have to say, I'm looking around, you know, I'm listening to the Twins, you know, because they talked to me the other day. It was like the teacher was talking about Vietnam and freedom in the same sentence. I'm like, wait one damn minute. These are 9-year-old kids. What the hell are you telling them about Vietnam? You see? So, yeah, I'm always on edge.
I've got it constantly here, Sandra.
I have to go have a conversation with that teacher. I'm like, I don't know, you know, I don't know what you're telling. Oh, anyway, I won't even go into it.
No, I understand, because my son's got a biology teacher who is supposed to be teaching, you know, biology.
Right. Yes.
Uh-huh. Right. She's a young Earth creationist.
Well, you know, see, no.
You know, my daughter, my youngest came home the other day. And, of course, you know how it is in high school gossip, right?
Well, high school, yeah. Mm.
So it turns out this one kid got busted with some pills.
Oh.
And so the response, and it's always over the top, The response was to come in and search every child.
Well, no, see, that's, you know, with the whole prison mentality and public education, you know, it's all meshed together now. Wow. That's not called for.
My 14-year-old daughter.
Being handled? No, see, that's not happening. That's not on. My goodness.
And I'm willing to say something about it, but there's nobody else that is.
Well, and it's really disturbing that
And see, when you upset the apple cart like that, they do things to you around here. And
they do things to your kids. You know, you have to. What is your child going to have to put up with because of your assertiveness? Let's just call it that.
And so all I could do was sit down and really forcefully, and she thought I was mad at her, but I wasn't. And I tried to make it abundantly clear that I wasn't angry with her. But I said, these are your rights.
Yeah.
And they're not embarrassing to have. They're absolutely necessary to have. And if anybody ever puts their hands on you or tells you that they want to search you or that they want to ask you questions, the first thing out of your mouth is call my parents.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
and then you don't say squat afterward. You sit there like a graven image. Nothing.
Yeah, that's for real. No, I don't, you know, I really am sort of, I don't have any patience for these idiots. And especially if they have influence over young people that I care about, I'm like, oh, hell no. You know, you can teach your reading and writing. Leave the other stuff alone because you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Bear in mind, I'm not some little black flag anarchist, okay? I know the system, and I operate in it, and I understand societal norms, and I understand greater societal needs and all of that. But by the same token, just presuming, and it was just a fishing expedition to see if anybody had the pills that this kid had had.
No, it's just...
To build a case against the kid, you see.
Yeah, but what it's sort of exposing the youngsters to is really disturbing, you know, a sort of a life where there is no privacy and, you know, you don't have any rights and on and on and on. And I'm just so sick of how just brutalized youth in this country is. But then again, it's a reflection of the larger society, isn't it?
Sure it is. And it's a reflection of a desire to create a compliant society, a society that will lay down and take it, because we're fast approaching, and, you know, this is not the apocalypse part of the program or anything, Sandra, but I think you and I both agree that we're kind of approaching this place where things are going to change, and rather dramatically. You know, I think, what's the phrase, a paradigm shift?
Well, yeah, I mean, and which reminds me of, I'm sorry, but, you know, the Italian stuff, that shit is off the chain, too. I was looking, I'm like, I couldn't believe that the spread shot up so quickly, you know, past the point of no return today. I'm looking at that and thinking.
Well, I saw the other day that the Italian bond yield went over 7%. And
that's what I'm saying. It's right now, it's at, you know, today it closed at 7.3. They were bailing out Ireland and Greece when it was like 6.7. So what's happening here is, I was looking at it, they said, oh, well, they would have to need a package deal, brace yourself, of $1.4 trillion. You know, let's start laughing out the room. What? You know? Basically, it's not happening. They're too big to fail and too big to bail, if we may use these sayings now. And so I don't. You know, I don't know what's going on.
And Berlusconi sets it up as a sort of a hostage taking. I'll only quit if you screw yourselves.
Well, yeah, I know, but you know, the thing, you know, once again, it's sort of the Northern League is like one bounce away from straight up Mussolini fascism. Anyway, you know what I'm saying? It's so suspect, and but it's really a worry because if you know. Markets are just becoming incompatible with democracy, first of all. It's just bizarre. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Because the politicians aren't acting a certain way, now the markets are dictating terms. And I'm like, oh, what? Do they have an army? Did I miss something?
And what? But
you know.
So is I mean the way I understand it though, the Italians have no recourse except to hit the streets like the Greeks did.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know. Well, the thing is that they can, you know, the euro can. I guess they could. I already read an article where they're talking about, you know, some sort of rump euro where it would be Germany, Austria, Luxembourg, a couple other countries, and France. And I'm thinking.
In other words, it would be the Deutsche Mark if the Germans had succeeded.
That's sounding Third Reich-y. You understand what I'm saying?
I just went the same place.
I was really nervous when I was reading the list because, you know, France on a bad day can go fascist. So, you know, let's not be unclear about the state of that place. And so you have those countries and they let the other ones go, I guess. And they said no to Belgium because Belgium is a basket case, you know. They have no government and the banks are collapsing left and right in Belgium. So they wouldn't be invited to the rump party. So, and Merkel, she is in some different world that we don't know about, too, because she's still pretending that the European Central Bank is just controlling the currency. It's like, where are you at, lady? So she still thinks that the European Central Bank should just be concerned about inflation targets and whatnot. Hello?
And yet, at the bottom of all of this, Sandra, it comes back to what you said earlier. These markets are incompatible with notions of democracy. And I guess the larger question is, have they always been incompatible? And is this just a matter of the screen being pulled away? Or have they gotten so out of hand that...
It's out of hand because if you look at another thing that's interesting is back to the whole sort of credit default swaps. You know how we were talking about that? I said, where's the credit event when Greek was talking about 50%?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you buy an insurance, but if someone tells you that my shit ain't worth but half now, where's the insurance, right, Bob?
Exactly.
So it didn't kick in. And some people are suggesting that the reason why this shit is happening in Italy is because people are like, well, shit, the credit default swaps didn't kick in, so how am I going to be buying this Italian shit? Because it ain't going to kick in either, you see what I mean? That means contagion. And France, if you look at France, they had some sort of, you know, huge spread today, the highest. It was like 140 B, I forget the units. But if you compare that to what it closed last year, it was 40. So it's tripled in its problems. France, AAA France. So, you know, it's, you know, like I said, it's, I don't really know what's going on, but I saw that our stock markets went to hell here too, didn't they?
Yeah, that was a three. Was that a hiccup or was that a full on puke?
I have no idea. But you know, at the end of the day, though, Ohio said, you know, fuck you. We want to keep our unions. I mean,
and it turned out there were some. Hey, look, there were some sane. There were some sane people in Mississippi.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking around. I'm like, you know, and all I have to say is, them people, they need to stay occupying. Because that shit is fucking with these politicians. They don't know what to do. They're like, wait, Americans are outside and the winter sleeping? You know, I just think that it's really doing people's head in position of power. Because, you know, we had this before in a generation. You know what I mean? And the whole occupying something like they did in the Middle East, you know, Americans don't follow other countries. What's going on? You know what I mean? So I think that...
Well, that's why they have to define them as DFHs. And yeah. Bongo drum players and dope smokers and window breakers.
No, but it's not. I mean, I don't want to overestimate the value of it, but I swear to God, it's been a real shift in just the dialogue with that Occupy Wall Street. I really think it's, and very rapidly, too, you know, sort of.
But did you notice Kasich's response to the...
I listened to a clip, yeah.
The people of Ohio have rejected the tools we gave them.
Oh, no, it's like, dude, you need to worry about how you're going to stay in office.
And running around, did you see this one? Running around wearing a polo shirt, and this one's a real polo shirt because it comes from a polo club.
Mm.
A polo shirt with the crest of a whites-only polo club on it.
When was this?
The last day or so.
Listen, I guess these people are buying their own PR because the Ohio thing, I didn't think it would be that much of a defeat. That shit was soundly defeated.
But there's a little bit of psychosis going on in Ohio, though, Sandra, because look at the referendum about the Affordable Care Act.
Well, no, I saw that, and I know that one, and that won, right? But listen, I don't know. Maybe we differ about it. I have huge problems with this mandate stuff. I'm sorry. I know that the right is taking it on to get at Obama, but I'm not very comfortable with the need for a citizen to have to purchase product from a privately held.
I'm right there with you on that.
I got issues.
I'm right there with you on that issue, Sandra. But the other part of it is that what these are, whether it's Mississippi with its personhood or Ohio with a referendum to reject the Affordable Care Act.
What, to get the voters out?
No. These are little probes, if you will. These are little, you know, testing the wire efforts at nullification.
Yeah, okay. Well, the nullification is always sort of looming over for those of us who, you know, have a sense of history, and I know, you know, the sort of balkanization is always undercurrent these days, at least at the Horn, because I believe that shit too. I think that it won't take too much for us to be at 1858 again. You know what I'm saying?
If we're not at 1855 already, because all of this stuff, the immigration, the Affordable Care Act, the personhood business. These all share a common theme of nullification that was rampant in the 1850s. And, you know, again, it's a history problem for those of us like the Horn family who, you know, like to know our history. I mentioned last night that I've just started a book on Aaron Burr. And I find Aaron Burr to be an absolutely fascinating character in American history. Simply because the Young Republic painted him. If the Young Republic could have known that Darth Vader was coming, they would have given him the cape and the mask, Aaron Burr. And what they painted him as, whether it turns out to have been true or not, because it was probably Thomas Jefferson's absolutely sleaziest moment, the treason prosecution, they painted him as a secessionist. And, of course, there had been secessionist mumblings out of the brand new Western states. There were secessionists. I think I've mentioned before that New Hampshire tried to hire Daniel Webster to help New Hampshire secede from the Union way early. And so while we tend to look, and rightly so because of the vast scope of it, at the Civil War as the manifestation of secession, secession has always been, from literally the very beginning of the Republic, an undercurrent that ran through it.
Yeah. Well, I vaguely remember some of the discussions that went on at the convention, you know, the convention, and so much of it revolved around, you know, the Southern states and what the hell they needed and wanted. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
But right after the ratification of the Constitution, for 3 years, Pennsylvanians refused to pay taxes. That's some serious stuff, and, you know, mostly we know about the Whiskey Rebellion. But there were three separate instances where the people of Pennsylvania said, man, I ain't gonna pay no damn federal tax. Screw you.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, for sure. Basically, it's very tenuous, and, you know, I mean, all of it didn't really it all sort of coalesced to the degree that it is now, you know, when the Great Depression hit and under Roosevelt. I mean, that was when the feds really grabbed the power, and it's been kind of dubious ever since.
It has.
I mean, as far as the states trying to get out from under, I mean, I agree with you. I do think that, another financial crisis, another blow, that is more of a worry to me than some fucking terrorist attack. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, hell yeah.
The state of this country. I think another hit like 2008 or some blowback from this madness in Europe. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, see, that goes to what, you know, me rereading The Guns of August, Barbara Tuchman, and she makes these, when you go through there are just these little pearls that you're just reading along and you go, wait a minute, I got to go back. And there was this, she was, there's a discussion in the book of how Wilson, how dedicated Woodrow Wilson was to retaining the United States status as a neutral country. And the reasons he wanted to be neutral. And he wanted to be neutral because he had a reform agenda for the United States. And she just drops this little pearl in there where she says, but Wilson recognized that war stifles reform. And ever since I read that over the weekend, it's been all over me like poison ivy. War stifles reform. So lo and behold, you and I both saw yesterday's New York Times article about Iran. And I played a little bit of saber rattling from Condoleezza Rice. And God knows that's not the end of the saber rattling. There's saber rattling all over this country if you pay attention to it. Just aching for war with Iran. And some of that, well, most of that, Sandra, is pretextual. Because the reason you drive a country into war in a situation like this is because it stifles reform.
Well, and did you see, because I sent you that old article, I mean, from 2007. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, it's just disturbing because the sort of amnesia is being afflicted on us even quicker now. Are we really supposed to believe that the whole intelligence community of the United States said Iran was not doing anything since 2003? And now I'm supposed to believe that they're a minute away from attacking Israel with one? Come on.
Right, because it's all this business about modeling that they've done and trigger research.
Yeah.
Well, here's the hint. If you're still doing the research, you don't have the trigger.
And not only that, but what about that vicious virus they unleashed on them? I mean, I forget what it's called, Stuxnet, or one of these hideous viruses that sort of set the program back a whole bunch. I mean, basically, you know, I just think it's drumming, you know, back to Iraq again. I don't believe it.
And because of all the power dynamics that are involved with this, you can't help hauling out that tired old Latin phrase, cui bono. Who benefits out of this?
Mm.
Well, if oil goes up to $200 a barrel, we get a pretty good idea, don't we?
Well, yeah, well, there's that. I mean, there's all sorts of different, geopolitical machinations. And don't forget that there's a sizable number of the Gulf states that are like, yeah, please do Israel, and can you help out America, you see what I'm saying, to attack Iran.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a bit of a worry, because it's...
And again, consider that we are still awaiting the lofty pronouncement from on high of the Super Congress.
Well, no.
Which might have some Pentagon cuts in it, but we can't be cutting any Pentagon budget. You know, we might have to go blow the snot out of Iran one of these days. And, you know,
yeah.
I mean.
Oh, no, but I don't know. What I mean, that whole Super Committee stuff looks to be in deep trouble. I don't know what's going to come out of that. But do they really think that Congress, under the sort of pressure that's happening now, is just going to go up or down? I see it as...
But there are triggers built in there if the super committee can't reach an agreement, right?
I suppose. But a new Congress can alter those triggers. You know what I mean? I'm not saying it's not going to happen. We are talking about the U.S. Congress, Bob.
Well, there is that.
I guess it's supposed to all come down when? The 23rd, right before Thanksgiving?
Yeah. And what a Thanksgiving that's going to make for. And, of course, you know, the for-profit media will be right out there, out front, having a tizzy for the week beforehand. That's mainly what the for-profit media are for these days, is having tizzies.
Well, especially when it's going to be another, you know, pseudo-government shutdown fakery that's coming, too, I guess. But, listen, I need to know, I read that there was, like, 12,000 people around the White House this weekend.
Yes.
Did you see any? I really didn't see much reporting on that. So
no, it really wasn't worth reporting on Fox or
but you know
CNN.
What? I'm getting the impression that it's causing a lot of tizzy in the White House, though. They didn't really expect this, did they?
No, they didn't. It was just
hit in Nebraska. Them people freaking out too, aren't they?
And that's Nebraska. See, we could spend 5 or 10 minutes on that alone, Sandra. That's Nebraska. They don't do that. That's, you know, heartland America. Stand up and march when you're told to stand up and march, and the good conservative values. But no, they're going to get screwed.
No, but they are. I mean, I thought they were trying to pass bills to sort of reassess, you know, their dealings with the possible pipeline too. I got the impression that. That people are kind of not too keen on it out there.
No, that's what I'm getting at. They're not. They don't like it, and that's completely out of character for lay down and take it, Nebraska.
Right. Well, anyway, and so because there were, you know, I know they had been mentioned that, oh, you know, you might try to postpone it to after the election, but so what? I mean, they'll just keep. I mean, it seems like the pressure is kind of on, election or no election. I don't see how that plays into it.
And again, the sweat factor for the White House out of this is precisely that the people who are coming there are Obama supporters who might very well be willing to walk away. That's why the biggest part of this one article that I was talking about having read earlier today that contained the statement Obama ended mountaintop removal is a great big attack on people protesting the tar sands pipeline.
So they resorted to just lying then.
Yeah, and mischaracterizing things like saying if we don't build the pipeline, there'll be more drilling in Nigeria. Well, there's going to be more drilling in Nigeria, pipeline or no pipeline. There's going to be more drilling everywhere as long as it's tolerated and permitted.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, I'm as in awe of, you know, Americans hitting the streets as the next. I have to say I'm... Really, yeah, and I just think that, you know, in the spring, I mean, what is this election year going to be like, you know? I'm like, popcorn much, got to get it.
And, it's going to be huge in the spring. Look at what went down in Atlanta. They've had trouble with the mayor of Atlanta from the very beginning, been thrown out of Woodruff Park, so forth. Well, they went and occupied a police officer's house whose house is getting foreclosed.
Shut the hell up.
And the whole neighborhood loved it.
Mm.
They set up 4 tents. They pitched an encampment on his lawn. And suddenly it was, well, you know, we don't know when the sheriff's office, we don't know when we're going to foreclose or evict or anything. I mean, really, I mean, nothing to see here. Move along.
Well,
but that's a cop.
Well. Yeah. I mean, and the Albany situation is really interesting, too, because they got porta potties. I mean, it's a whole different reality up there in Albany.
Yeah.
They got generators, the whole nine yards. You know, apparently the fire department came and inspected it to see if the generators were working right, not to do anything about them. So I guess just like everywhere, just like anything else in the U.S., the approach is varies. But I'm just hoping that... you know, there's a way for this to hang on, you know, through the 3 months of winter, you know, because I think the physical aspect of it is really important.
Well, it very much is, and I think it'll grow during that downtime because, you know, that's what, remember, you know, you and I, we both love that movie Being There.
Yeah.
In the winter, the garden will grow. Well, that's kind of applicable here, isn't it?
Well, yeah, just some, yeah, like serious organization building.
And it hasn't needed the for-profit media to get bigger. It's gotten bigger without it.
It don't need, well, no, I mean, this is, you know, listen, I was a bit weary about Twitter, but listen, I'm down. Twitter is on and it's cracking. Love it.
Because it just, boom, around the world instantaneously.
Yeah, no, it's great. And, you know, I mean, I have to say, I'm not a big Facebook fan. I can't get with it. It's just too much trying to get information from you and all these weird. I just too much. But
that's why I keep my interactivity with Facebook to a pretty much minimum. But the nice thing is I use TweetDeck, so I set it up so that whatever I tweet goes to Facebook, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can have conversations on Facebook with people who want to have conversations with me on things that I write about on Facebook.
Yeah.
But I don't have to run. And I swear to God, then let's just make this a public notice on the horn. Do not send me a request in Farmville. Just don't.
Oh, see, no. All that Zynga, all that stuff is way weird. Oh, no. I can't get with it. I find it very disturbing. And I'm not interested in their timeline of your goddamn life. That shit gives me a heebie. I'm not into the Facebook. I'm trying to get with
it. And the ads that are on there, I noticed that some enterprising person out there has ripped off poor Bart Cop. Now, you know, Bart Cop is one of those internet godfathers as far as the progressive side is concerned, because he's been raising hell since it was just a message board.
Right, yeah.
And a year or so ago, he made a T-shirt that has George Bush's face on it. I bought one. Boss Man Wayne has one. And it's got George Bush's face on it, and it says, "I screwed everything up, but thanks for blaming the black guy." And lo and behold, there's somebody hustling that T-shirt on Facebook now. I see it on my page all the time.
Mm.
You know, no reference to Bart Cop. He invented it. It was his idea. But, and it's just sleazily commercial. That's the best way we can put it. And with Zuckerberg getting in bed with, David Cameron.
Hideous, and you know, there's been questionable accusations about, you know, the sort of venture funding arm of the CIA contribute to Facebook initially. I mean, it's all sorts of weird stuff around that company. I've been trying to get into the Google Plus, but as of yet, you know, I'm really not understanding it.
No, and I don't even understand Twitter. There are things you can do with Twitter that I can't even comprehend yet, like the managing of lists, and you can set up bots and time your posts to go out and stuff like. And I need, you know, I need a little 5-day mini seminar masterclass on all this stuff.
Oh yeah, well no, I mean, I know this is just getting really inside. I mean, I can send you a couple of links for some Twitter tutorials. You know, there is so much good stuff out there. Oh my God! As far as like teaching yourself about the, Web 2.0 and now Web 3.0. I'm actually going to a seminar tonight about Web 3.0. So.
Oh, that'll be cool. Take good notes, would you?
I'll keep you informed. Yeah.
By the way, David in Tennessee said it was the Stuxnet virus.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Unleashed on Iran by the U.S. and Israeli CIA types. Ferreted into the Iran centrifuge plant that refines the fuel for either the bomb or making power. The virus caused about 15% of the several thousand centrifuges to run at an out-of-control and ultimately destructive rate. The project added 18 to 24 months to Iran's project to have enough fuel for a bomb, and that's the basics.
Wow.
But David said something else that I think might speak to you, and that is, you know, we were talking about Europe just a little bit ago, running back to that, Sandra. He said the dirty little secret of the UK Euro realm is that all of Mr. Cameron's Thatcher-hatched austerity programs are a huge flop.
Oh, no. It's terrible what he's done to the English economy right quick when they had loads of tools to work with, i.e. they could have stimulated everything, not cut. It's
right, and that's the larger point that David was making. He said it isn't having no effect on merry oldie England's bad position. It's having an adverse effect. Oopsie.
Yeah, oh, no. They're doing a good damn job of screwing themselves. I just mean, you know, the fact that they have access and control of their own currency is a much better position these days than those poor countries trapped in the sort of monetary union there, you know?
Oh, yeah. And hanging on to the pound looks positively Churchillian at this point.
Well, yeah, no, that was, you know, I mean, I read some interesting, you know, and I'm, trust me, I don't want to say it, but I read some hella interesting quotes from Thatcher. Home bitch knew what the hell she was talking about as far as that European Union was going. I got to give it to her.
Yeah.
Don't listen. I'll deny it. I'll deny it.
That's okay. The recording's not running, Sandy.
Oh, God. But she did. She pointed out some really interesting aspects of the unification of Germany, I was like, oh, wow, that's like playing out right now. And, you know, just the sort of English position in relation to the integration, she was, I have to say, she kind of, I don't know, she kind of knew what she was talking about.
Well, you know, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then, Sandra.
I know, but I really despise Thatcher. You know, I was in England when she was on her way, when John Major's kind of flipped it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so anyway, I won't go on. I just had to touch base again, mainly because of the Jopa hell. I don't even know what to think.
And yeah, Michael just wrote in a little bit ago, Sandra, and he said, being that it's Wednesday, and perhaps it would be apropos if we took to referring to Bishop Paterno and Father Sandusky.
Ah, that's messed up.
Well, I mean, it kind of tracks, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, because it's that's a Penn State is. I'm ignorant. It's Catholic, isn't it?
Well, I mean, no, I mean that's a state's university, but just more in line with who covers for whom.
Oh,
you know, it's
okay.
it's the priests out on the ground that are doing the little boys and the bishops that do all the cover ups. So consequently, Bishop Paterno and Father Sandusky.
Okay, I got it. Okay, well, listen, been a long day. I'm slow on the uptake. Anyway, okay, listen, have a good evening.
All right, take it easy, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Man, we covered some ground. 11 minutes past 8. Here on the East Coast. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Kim writing, I mentioned something about questioning authority. And Kim writing says, out of my favorite book, Be a Friend Among Friends. I interpret that as being a person among people, unforgivably. Some are sicker than others, and we have to be assertive with who we allow to be in the presence of our kids today. And it's the absolute truth. And more, it's hard not to give serious consideration to homeschooling. God knows that's a conversation that's been had around here. I mean, I was furious. I was furious when I found out about that search. But if I'm the only person who goes up there and raises hell about it, well, certainly paints a target, doesn't it? Not that I don't already have a couple, didn't I? Yeah, remember it. Sabotage vehicles, things like that. David in Tennessee noting, football sleaze. Now you have all the awareness necessary needed as to why I'm drifting more and more toward minor league baseball. None of it's wart-free, but baseball for straight-up money stops a lot of the ugly. And that's where this whole thing is. I mean, I know Saturday's coming up. The Mountaineers basically did in their competitive hopes with that miserable home performance against Louisville. I mean, I know you enjoyed it and everything, Corey, but come on. Now we go face Cincinnati, and things ain't looking good. And I seriously have doubts about whether it's even worth it to turn on the TV. I mean, I read a lot. I love to read. And I sit around and noodle on the guitar some, and I listen to Ferg noodle on his much more effectively. Shh, he let me put up just a little tiny YouTube clip the other day. And I think he's about halfway tickled. It was totally impromptu. He was just sitting around playing and didn't even have a shirt on. And I used the phone video camera and just put it up on the web. But, there's not the economic underpinnings to do something that, you know, that requires getting out of town or hotels or anything like that. So, yeah, in the fall, Saturdays, college football. Bob, take up knitting. Aw. Do you understand what I'm getting at? And to have, I don't know what fills the gap. I don't know what fills up that space. Because I was raised on it. It's something I enjoy. It's something my father and I did together. There's heritage behind it. And memories. I can't imagine what my father would be saying about this Joe Paterno, Penn State, Jerry Sandusky thing. It would probably involve the violence. Because it's hard not to go there. Kim, for instance, talking about giving a gentle push to Joe. How about putting Joe in the shower naked and having him face the bosses, telling him, it's time, Joe. Let him feel a little vulnerable in the shower. And this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and it does make me just the idea that one can say, well, we certainly prayed for those little buggered boys. And that does something? Just as we talked at rather considerable length last week about that monster in Aransas County, Texas, who viciously beat his daughter. And I pointed out the fact that it's the nature of Christianity that doctrine and dogma says all he has to do is, I'm sorry, Jesus, and it's all okay. All the vulgarities that he used, all the ferocity, the viciousness in his backswing, and the energy he poured into the downswing, and the snap and the crack and the bang of that leather landing on the flesh of that child. Sorry, Jesus. That's okay, my son. Wait a minute. That's okay, my son. I forgive you for beating your child with a big leather belt and making her cry and scream and have nightmares. I forgive you. It's why I got on the cross after all. Same here. Same thing in Happy Valley. Happy Valley, State College, Pennsylvania.
What'd you want me to do? I prayed for him. Isn't that enough? Don't you people know we've got Nebraska to face?
So Saturdays. Yeah, Saturdays are in question. Saturdays in the fall are in question. And of course, I'm sure there are a lot of people, I know there are a lot of people in the audience who would like it very much if I would find something else to do with my Saturdays.
Hey guys, it's Monday. Wow, did I hear a great broadcast of opera today on Saturday? Yeah.
Yeah, Jude, that's right. Jude just dropped an email along. She said, college, enjoying college football. As your mantra goes, Bob, they want it all, even to the point of destroying a sport by the ugly and sick behavior of a few. Signed, Jude. Yeah, it's not like I lost something. It is like something has been taken away. And by the way, David from Maine, sending along a little, hey, Bob, look at this moment. He's really good for those. Bob, read the Amazon reviews for Jerry Sandusky's book, Touched. Yeah, you can get a leather-bound copy from Amazon. Oh, Jesus. And somebody, a lot of somebodies, really went to town on reviewing this book. 234 of 254 people found the following review helpful. 100% false advertising by Mr. Sandusky. Not a single page in this book touches on how to appropriately gain the trust of young at-risk boys and then use that trust to perpetrate horrifying sexual assaults on the very children who turn to you for guidance and support. Almost as disappointing as the first time I watched Touched by an Angel. Don't even get me started on that bullcrap. I still can't watch anything with Della Reese in it. Then this. When it comes to touching, there's nobody I know of that can better call upon 40 years' experience of bad touch than one Jerry Sandusky. Stay hard, Jerry. You sick piece of excrement, Joe Pa. You aren't clean either, buddy. And then this review title. Seriously? What a slap in the face to all of his victims. A book titled Touched, written by a pedophile. Mr. Sandusky is both a genius and a narcissist, which makes him the perfect predator. At no time was his narcissism more apparent than when he titled his book Touched. I guarantee this coward will off himself before he ever spends a day with the general prison population. I, for one, would like to see him spend the rest of his life locked up with the general prison population. Then, perhaps he can write the sequel entitled Touched 2, Predator Becomes Prey. But again, these things have relevance beyond the immediate. And we ignore them at our peril. You know, the other night I had a story out of Michigan about how a town there has not only turned off its streetlights, but it has even removed them from their emplacements. And again, it's not something that just happens in a vacuum. It's happening other places, too. Rockford, Illinois, for instance. Rockford, Illinois. They don't have any streetlights anymore, either. And, you know, it's not far from no streetlights to no cops. Again, I'm no black flag anarchist, but I'm also not a marching authoritarian either. And I recognize that, you know, you need the cops once in a while. But they'll be on the way out. And then there's Indiana. Where, do I understand this correctly? Parents are being charged bus fare for their children to go to school. Yeah. And of course, there are now lines from parents dropping off their children at the school, which makes everybody late. And that says something. That says something pretty damned huge when you get right down to it. Bus fare? Really? And they can't afford it. Just can't afford it. Yeah, Texas Betsy, I blogged the Indiana school bus story in August.
Oh, this is good. Jay in Yuma. Something else to do on Saturday. Bob, did I mention that I'm an avid cyclist and have been for my whole life? I'm totally serious. Consider riding a bike. Check around to see if there's a local bike club. Oh, there is. It's across the river, about 10, 12 miles away. And, yeah, I guess that's a possibility. I could look into that. But it's not exactly, I mean, I'm not being an ass or anything, Jay, but this ain't Yuma. It's, cycling is not a four-season sport around here. But, yeah, things like, and God knows that would be extremely good for me. I need to, I'm trying to work on getting out and doing a little, you know, motion, losing some weight here, you know, during that week that I was off air. And I don't recommend it as a diet, but during that week I was off air, I lost something like 25 pounds in 12 days. Yeah. Randall, sorry, but football reminds me of a bunch of Klingons butting heads in a Klingon pub. And then, of course, you get to see the bombers flying over the field. Yeah, yeah, Randall. And that whole it builds character thing is so over for me. We'll figure something out. Now, some other stories to go into before the evening ends, because we are about 34 minutes from the end of the program this evening. Things that deserve a mention, since it is Wednesday. This. God. By the way, have I mentioned, I worship at the shrine of Right Wing Watch. What tremendous work they do. And they just happened to pick up on this little gem, and Morris sent it along. This is one not to be missed. They done had the right-wing religion industrial complex, the religion industry, has had themselves a little secret meeting. It was hosted by Florida Renewal Project. The media were banned. But they did film it so they could produce DVDs to use for One Nation Under God house parties during the 2012 election cycle. They want to register 5 million religion industry voters before the 2012 election in November. Well, Right Wing Watch actually got a copy of the One Nation Under God house party DVDs. And tucked away in it is a little gem from that aging monstrosity, James Dobson. I'm not going to describe it for you. I'm going to let him do it himself.
Many people look at where our country has been heading for a while, and they think that our best days are behind us. What would you say to that?
Well, I hate to agree with them, but in some ways I do.
Now, I don't want to make anybody disgusted or anything, but just a caveat, just a, hey, remember, this is James Dobson. This is a man who says that children, he's got a PhD in child, no, he's got an Ed.D. in child psychology from the University of Southern California. And his philosophy is that children should be beaten until they cry what he describes as real tears. You know, not the part of the beating where the child is hollering, "Daddy, stop beating me," or starts screaming, "Daddy, stop beating me," or begging, "Stop beating me." No, no, because the tears aren't really flowing yet and don't have that real quality that gives a true Christian a real Woody.
Children have to be beaten until they cry real tears of repentance so that they understand how goddamn dirty they are. And so this guy is going to offer an answer to the question of whether America's best days are behind it. Oh, and by the way, before we go any further into the clip, just another gentle reminder. This is the guy. Now, I mention this because of what we've been discussing about what happened at Penn State University and what Jerry Sandusky is alleged to have done to little vulnerable boys in the showers of the football complex at Penn State University's State College campus. This is a man who said that you can keep little boys from turning into homosexuals if only their daddies will take them into the shower with them and shake his penis at them and show them what a real man looks like. Well, this is not the satire and parody portion of the program. This is what this man really said. So, therefore, I don't know. I wonder what James Dobson's response would be to the Jerry Sandusky, Joe Paterno scandal in State College, Pennsylvania. It did, after all, happen in the shower where James Dobson, Dr. Dobson, says that, well, that's where you go to keep little boys from turning into homosexuals. But this is the guy who has the authority and expertise to explain just exactly what it is that America most badly needs.
These are behind us. What would you say to that?
Well, I hate to agree with them, but in some ways I do. I am most concerned about the drift away from Christian principles. If we forget who we are as a nation, if we forget the scriptural and biblical heritage that brought us to this point, there's nothing that says God has to bless us like he has. I mean, well, he's not obligated to do that.
Because, you know, that's what God was doing. God was just blessing us all over the place back when millions of human beings were kept in human bondage through the institution, the vile and hateful institution of slavery. That was God blessing America. Because back then we knew what we were and we knew where we came from. That's what it was. It was God's blessings on America when black folk hung from trees in the night, the torch-lighted night of the southern nightmare of lynching. That was just God blessing America, because that was back when we knew where we came from. It was God blessing America when people were tormented and tortured and killed for, you know, even being thought to be homosexual. And where women were driven out, cast from society, if they were thought to have a penchant for that love that dare not speak its name. So clearly, Dr. Dobson, if I'm ever hurt, don't let this man near me with a Band-Aid, he'll kill me. He's that kind of doctor. He wouldn't be any less a healer. Well, never mind. There are some pretty damn good healers out there with grass skirts and bones through their noses and rattles. You know, when their gods are appropriately invoked, they can be quite effective. Well, tell us what's going to happen, Dr. Dobson. I can't wait to hear.
And so our future depends on our past, and especially where we are now. Are we going to continue to honor God with the holy living that he prescribes for us. If we don't...
You know, the holy living. Like when you take a disobedient child to the city gates and tell them, let's see, what's the official prescription in the Old Testament? This child is rebellious and a drunkard and will not heed my instruction. And then the city elders are to take up the child and carry him outside the city gates and stone him until he is dead. You know, holy living. Or the holy living that happens when women are to remain silent in church because, you know, they're just not as smart as the menfolk. Where women are supposed to take the beatings that their husbands give out to them because women are to submit unto their husbands as the church submits unto Christ. That kind of holy living. Yeah.
Serious trouble. And right now, I think we are. Whenever countries have forgotten who they are, and especially the principle.
You know, it happens to me every morning. I wake up and I go, wait a minute, isn't this really? Where am I? I've forgotten who my country is. Oh, that's right. I'm in Brazil. Kind of chilly for Brazil. No. This is Burkina Faso. We've forgotten who we are. All them signs and the McDonald's menu, some of them's in Spanish. You might even think he's in Mexico. And God'll quit blessing you if you think you're in Mexico. That James Taylor talking about wanting to go to Mexico sounds so sweet with the song Singing Low. Oh, he was an ungodly man who had forgotten where he was.
That have been taught in Scripture. They did pay a price for it, and I think we will too. I happen to see this particular election cycle as absolutely critical. We're going to find out pretty quick which direction we're going. And if it's going to be as it's been in the past, I hate to say it, but we deserve what's going to happen to us.
We deserve what's going to happen to us. Now, remember, please, James Dobson is part of the 1%. So when he says us, he means you. He doesn't mean him. We're going to deserve what's going to happen to us. Now, what he means by this is, and this is all dog whistling, so he doesn't have to actually say it out loud, because since that's the beauty of dog whistling, his adherents and followers and filthy little minions understand what he means. He's talking about re-electing that Negro. Because what America needs, the only person that can turn America back to what they need to be and make us remember who we were is, you know, Michelle Bachmann or Newt Gingrich, the serial marriageist. It is certainly not Willard Romney. He's one of those magic underwear people that lets John Huntsman out, too. Rick Perry. Rick Perry can tell us who we are. Hallelujah, Jesus. No, really. Yeah, just one more time.
Pay a price for it, and I think we will too. I happen to see this particular election cycle as absolutely critical. We're going to find out pretty quick which direction we're going. And if it's going to be as it's been in the past, I hate to say it, but we deserve what's going to happen to us.
That's right. Everything that happens, earthquakes and tsunamis and all kinds of nasty, nasty things are going to come our way if Barack Obama is reelected. And we're going to deserve it. And by the way, Jude noting my granddaughter has been charged for 2 years now to ride the bus to the local middle school on the island of Oahu at $70 a quarter. I've often wondered, what if the family can't pay? little signposts. There's a signpost up ahead. And it says, no, it doesn't say the Twilight Zone. No. Jude also taking issue with Dr. Dobson's use of the word hate. What a word, she says, for a man of faith to use. Help us, God, but please don't let it be their God. Because after all, it's a scary world out there. As proof, I offer you a lady by the name of Donna Marfanti. Michael sent this along. Different Michael. We've got several Michaels like we got several Davids. It is a frightening world out there. Just listen to her.
At my 25th wedding anniversary that was in my house that was an accursed object. Immediately God told me who and what it was. So I went upstairs, I woke my husband up, and I said, we got to take this to the garbage dump in Milton, which was about 7 miles away. And we laid hands on it, bound all the demonic spirits in it, put it in a green garbage bag, and went to go into our car, and two 80-foot demons attacked us.
80 foot?
They're 80 feet tall.
80
I didn't measure them, but
look. Like 4 foot. I'm trying to visualize. 80 foot. You take your house's average two-story house is what, 25 feet?
More, maybe 40. This was twice.
So they're as high as the sky almost. No, they're big.
The hatred they had in them. The hatred and the emptiness, the void. It was, and they came at us with such a vengeance. I mean, they were just coming at full speed ahead, like breaking tree leaves and branches and trees, trying to get to it. But my husband and I were so terrified that he was running in one direction around the car, and I was running in the opposite direction. We were passing each other, trying to figure out how to get in the car. And my husband's saying, it's okay, Jesus is here, Jesus is here. But he's running, and I'm running in the opposite direction. We're passing each other. And we got into that car, finally we figured it out. From, you know, when you're so afraid, I mean, you're just wild with fear. When that caught on fire and then burned to ashes, you could just feel it go, psh, the power of darkness.
Stop that, Turkey!
Yeah, okay. I'm thinking maybe they threw away the... I'm thinking away, they threw away the 25th anniversary gift of the case of champagne after they'd done drunk it. Because, I mean, I can get... I've done some stuff in my life. And I ain't never... I mean, okay, once I saw a fern melt and morph into snake's heads, but that was really bad stuff, man. But 80-foot demons? As big as the sky. Now, bear in mind, this crazy lady is the same thing as, is the same as the crazy man who, you know what, we're going to deserve it. If we vote for that Obama, we're going to deserve it, whatever happens. And there's that one. You know what's going to 80-foot demons. 80-foot, and they're scary, and they make you run around the car all backwards and stuff, and your husband's yelling, Jesus is here! Jesus is here! Yeah, Kim. Kim went for the obvious. That lady smoked too much dope. Yeah, you could argue that. I don't know, 160 proof absinthe through a straw. 80-foot demons. 80 feet. I mean, they were like bigger than my house. And see, that's what's coming. And when... Because these good-for-nothing right-wing pieces of crap refuse to pay taxes, and you have to tear the lights out in Michigan and Rockford, Illinois, and so it's all dark and stuff, then the demons get the jump on you. And you deserve whatever the demons do. See, that's one of the little problems with these people. They don't seem to understand the nature of demons. If, for instance, what is alleged to have been perpetrated by Jerry Sandusky was, in fact, perpetrated by him. If you want to jump on the demon bandwagon, go looking for Father Jerry Sandusky. And by extension, Bishop Joe Paterno. Because there's your demons. There's your demons. Yes, Sandra. Yeah, I just got a what? With about 6 exclamation points. No way. Is this for real? Yes, this is for real. Her name is Donna Monforti. 80-foot demons. But the problem is, with these fantasy-fixated right-wing religion industry Christians, that all the time they're out there looking for them 80-foot demons, there's a 6-foot-2-inch, 55-year-old guy heading a foundation for troubled boys. Who's doing the really demonic stuff. And then these upstanding right-wing authoritarians in turn take their marching orders from people who suggest that charging the demon with a crime is just a complicated way of making a football coach retire. And you know what? The demons love that part. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Jim. Don't forget, attack of the 50-foot woman. You never know what's on the... Maybe that's what was on the TV box the night that they realized... Because she awokened from a sound sleep after their 25th anniversary party, and she realized that there was a demonic presence among their gifts. I don't know if the towels didn't match. It's hard to say. But that's the fundamental ground level problem in this country. People looking for stuff that comes out of the nightmare realms of their dreamscape instead of recognizing the monsters who walk around every day. They don't, and you know, the reason the monsters get away with it is because they hide. Well, it's straight out of the purloined letter now, isn't it? You hide in plain sight.
Hi. I want to help your underprivileged son reach his full potential. Let him come to my camp. Hey, kid. Robert, phase 5 from the chat room, writing, a country founded as a dumping ground for Britain's prison population. I'm so happy to live in a country, Australia, founded as a dumping ground for Britain's prison population. We only have one loopy politician who does the Jesus bit, and he's a state member few take seriously. Try the religious card in federal politics, and your career is over. Rub it in, Robert. Rub it in. Too late for me to move. But this is a dangerous and scary place. It really is. And isn't it telling that a culture built upon a dumping ground for Britain's prison population, that the grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and multi-great-grandchildren of those people who were deemed not fit to live in proper British society turned out to build a pretty nice little culture for themselves. Not without problems, but not, as Robert notes, like we got. Meanwhile, a culture that established itself with landed gentry and aristocracies in everything but name gives rise to absolute, unmitigated, hate-filled insanity. Yeah. All right. Jude's given up. It's all too much. Oh, my. I think baking a German chocolate cake is needed for tonight. And damn, I may eat it all. Save some, Jude. It may be too much tomorrow night, too, but you're right. I think you're in the right direction. Chocolate is helpful in these circumstances. I love German chocolate cake. I love German chocolate cake ice cream. Oh, stop it, Bob. But this won't be... Oh, update. Update. I've been meaning to bring this up. Didn't want to forget it. This is not one of those moments where I have to reach over to the closet and pull out my frayed prophet's robe with the tattered moon and stars appliqued upon it, and the shredded cuffs and holes in the hood and stuff. But I was right. There will be no criminal charges for the Texas judge who so viciously beat his daughter. There will be no criminal charges. The United States attorney for the whatever district of Texas reviewed the video and said, nah, not really interested. And that was the end of it. Because Texas state law had already foreclosed any prosecution, because in the state of Texas, there's a 5-year statute of limitations for beating on children. If you can just keep the kid quiet for 5 years, you can beat the piss out of him. Ain't that some justice? I figured you'd at least want the follow-up, because after, well, you know, I was right about it. Wow, what a night. And somewhere out there, some right-wing presidential candidate is babbling madly away. And sometime tomorrow, I will have to deal with the sound bites. But not tonight. Here in a couple of minutes, I'm going to run away, I'm going to turn the television on, and I'm going to watch theoretical physics made manifest in a description of the larger universe. And part of that description of the larger universe is a description of the fact that the theoretical physicists now think that there may be universes upon universes upon universes upon universes, and there's a you all the way down through them. And you know what? Since I don't have any religion, I take some comfort in that. Because maybe, just maybe, there's a universe that has a Jerry Sandusky in it who doesn't bugger little boys for his own aggrandizement. And maybe there's a universe where a judge in Texas doesn't beat his daughter. Maybe there's a universe where human beings are not nearly as brutal to each other as what we are here. Maybe there's a universe where greed-driven monsters don't blow up mountains and poison children in the womb just so that they can be temporarily a little bit richer. One of the central tenets of all of this, as I understand it, is that time itself may not be what we think it is. If you recall your Kurt Vonnegut, you'll remember that Tralfamadorians have the ability to see time as just another dimension, like length and width and height and depth. And so they can see everything you've been and everything you are and everything you will be in the instant of seeing you. And there is an argument in that theoretical physics, and I'm way off my brief at this point, that time itself may be fluid, that it may eddy and swirl and run forward and backwards, and it's only our limitations that prevent us from seeing it. But science is trying. Meanwhile, millions, if not billions, of people follow a way of believing that gives credence to the existence of 80-foot demons chasing silly people around their cars. You pick. I know which one I prefer. Thanks, everybody, for just a wonderful evening. I do appreciate it. Thanks for your kind contributions and everything you do to make this all not just fun for the rest of the audience, but certainly worthwhile for me, because I get more out of this than I ever put into it. It's your interaction. You've changed me. You know, Agnes pointed out, she said, you know, Bob, you're not the same guy who started this. And that's because of you, because we have the power to change each other. And it happens a little bit here. It happens a lot here. Thank you. Thank you for participating. Thank you for keeping the lights on. If you'd like to help, the button, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. Either way works fine. We'll be back at it tomorrow evening. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo, our op-ed correspondent. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox, who very quickly made it possible for y'all to have a chat room tonight. Everybody say thank you, John. Thank you, John. And thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org is why these streams all get out like they do. Thanks, of course, always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, join up, be a part of Coal River Mountain Watch, and thereby be a part of the solution to the Appalachian apocalypse. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on The Horn.